Hey, this is Frank, author of the Host Deep Dive book, and you're listening to my buddy Speed and John on the Virtual Speaking Podcast.
Yo, bro, that's deep, bro. High five on that. Oh, yeah. Bros, if you don't get that, that's because it's deep and it's science, so don't question that, all right?
Let's do this.
What is virtualization?
You're going to learn today.
Innovate like a startup. Deliver like an enterprise.
I hope you're coffeeed up and ready because it's going to be a great day.
I know you're going to dig this.
Oh, yeah.
You're listening to the Virtually Speaking Podcast with Pedro Lero and John Nicholson.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Virtually Speaking Podcast, episode number 76. My name is Pete Fletcher, a.k.a. Pedro Arrow, and joining me once again is Mr. John Nicholson. John, how you doing, man?
I'm feeling relaxed, Pete.
Okay, I'll bite. Why are you feeling relaxed?
You know, we just got through the 6-7 launch. We just got through Empower.
Yeah.
I successfully got my taxes submitted, you know, with the, I didn't need to use the extra bonus day. Like I'm feeling accomplished. And this is the week to recharge before I hit 3 weeks on the road. So
oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm sure you're real relaxed now after that session. Man, we had a 3-hour deep dive session on vSAN at Empower 2018 about last week. And man, the session was great and the feedback was amazing, but it did not get off to a pretty good start. John, you want to explain?
Yeah, so we had all kinds of great, you know, grandiose schemes planned.
Yep.
And we get started and we try to get our laptops working, you know, to plug it in, and it's just not working. And then they try rewiring and bypassing some stuff, and there was some broken splitters, and then we try to get it working with the other laptop, and then that one, the battery starts dying, and apparently the charger's broken too. But at this point, like, it's an hour and a half session, so it's not like, you know, 30 minutes you can get up there, do a quick song and dance number and call it a day. You got an hour and a half of content to fill. You know, we start with doing some Q&A and just taking some questions. And then it slowly becomes, you know, all right, John, let's see if you can do an interpretive dance of the vSAN IO path. Because some of this stuff, it's a little harder to explain without, I try not to be dependent on PowerPoint. I really do. But it was an adventure.
Yeah, it was fun. We had a full room. We had a great, great feedback. And that was the best part about it, I think. You know, not having your presentation in front of you. I know they want to see the PowerPoint slides. People want to get the information. But it was nice because it really encouraged the audience to engage. And boy, did they engage. Partners came with guns loaded, lots of good questions. But unfortunately, there were also lots of good answers. So it worked out.
Yeah, I don't think I have answered that many questions in one session ever. It was that's one for the record books. So,
oh yeah. Well, for those of you that were not familiar, Empower 2018, which is a VMware partner event, was held in Atlanta last week, and it was essentially the ultimate technical training event for the year. And I had a chance to catch up with our good friend Jeff Hunter to explain sort of what exactly is Empower 2018. So take a listen.
So Empower is actually, if you will, a 2.0 version of PEX. So back in the day, many of the partners that we have out there will remember we had Partner Exchange, what we call PEX for short. And it used to be a separate event from VMworld. It was usually early in the year, like right around sales kickoff time for the calendar year, those types of things. And partners, we had a sales track and a technical track with that. And we heard that it was valuable, but then we thought, well, maybe we can be a little more efficient. So what we thought about doing at VMware was taking that event that we call PEX and just putting it in front of VMworld. And the thought there was that would give partners an opportunity to get some of the PEX sessions, but then also stay and get the benefit of spending time with customers, catching VMworld sessions and that sort of thing too. But as it turns out, while some folks thought that was a pretty good idea, other folks really liked the separation of the event. Because one thing that we did with the old PEX right before VMworld is we had it over the weekend. And that was a challenge just from families, right? Like, who wants to travel on a Friday, spend the weekend talking about technology when they could be home with their families and that sort of thing? So we got a lot of feedback on that. We also heard some feedback around guys, we want technical details. Give us the juicy stuff, right? Tell us how this stuff works, what makes sense, what doesn't make sense. So with that in mind, we developed this Empower event. So this is more or less PEX 2.0, if you will. But a couple of changes that we made. Number one, we made it just a little bit later, as you can tell in the year. In this case, we might have got a late start on it. But our apologies to the partners out there for that. We got a little bit of a late start, kind of a short notice. But it was really kind of a last-minute decision. But what's really cool about this, though, is that we had a fantastic turnout. I'm amazed at how many partners we have here, even with that short notice of event. Obviously, we're going to do things a lot different next year as far as a planning perspective, so you'll know about it a lot sooner. But that's one thing we did. The other thing we did, too, and some of the feedback we got from the old days was, like I said, make it technical. So we did that. We've got VTSP boot camps here, so that way partners can walk away with their certifications. You can do actual exams for VCP and VSAN certification, those types of things. You have the ability to do that. All of the sessions were made technical by design. You can catch the sales enablement type stuff online. What we wanted to do is give partners an opportunity to spend time with us face-to-face, folks like SEs and developers and technical marketing and so on and so forth, to ask the hard questions. So that way we could give them the straight answers. And so far the feedback has been fantastic. Every partner that I've talked to spoke highly about the event. They've given us a couple things we could tweak, but overall, very positive response. So I'm pretty darn sure this is going to be a thing going forward, and we have that to look forward to. Specific to vSAN, tons of interest. It's amazing how many people have turned up for the sessions. I mean, every vSAN session that we had has been sold out.
Yep.
Standing room only, people wanting to get in, not able to get in because the fire marshal said, no, there's no more room. We can't let you in because we will be violating the law. So tremendous interest in vSAN here at Empower. And again, thank you to the partners for that interest. And more importantly, for coming out here and joining us here at Empower this week. It's been a really good week, and I'm glad to be a part of it.
Yeah, so that's our buddy Jeff. Good stuff. And yeah, so John, I don't even know if you know this, but I also had a chance while we were there to walk around and grab some feedback from some of the folks that were there. And I wanted to get sort of what the feel was for Empower. And this is what I heard from the listeners there.
Wait, was this that part where you were walking around and just, creepily shoving a microphone in people's face and asking them questions? So I think I saw that from a distance.
Yeah. You know, what's funny about that is that's exactly right. I forget, we always walk around with mics. It's no big deal. But man, you shove a mic in someone's face, immediately they're like, whoa, what's going on here?
I did not, the people just start denying things. Like, I was not in Bogota last week. I promise. Like, what happened in Bogota? Like,
I did get one guy. One guy said this, though.
Ah, you're the virtual speaking guy.
Yeah. All right. So here's the little montage of the interviews that I captured at Empower 2018.
I'm from here for the technical details to learn from the experts.
For me, it was, it was a chance to, network with peers, but have some really good technical content. I've been very impressed with the content this entire last few days. Just every session has been, I think, even more valuable than VMworld in a lot of ways.
Especially HCI, that's a very hot topic, so recent, of course. SDDC, all the SDDC approach is on fire. This is what we're seeing all over.
VMware Cloud on AWS.
Educate on new versions of vSphere.
I'm a technical sales engineer for cloud and came here to find out what's new with vSphere 6.7, any changes with vSAN configurations, anything with respect to the integration of the SDGC, and it's been very beneficial.
Actually, I'm come from Hong Kong and I've come here for learning more about VMware. I want to get more deep dive technology because it is target for partner, so I can get more knowledge.
Roadmap items, obviously, where VMware is going with a bunch of the SaaS offerings. We're deep in a project with VMware Cloud right now, so learning more about that and hybrid cloud extension for sure.
It is a great opportunity for the partners to create more networking with other companies and other partners with the best in VMware.
So I was really interested in getting a leg up on some of the newer technologies like vSAN, what's coming out. So I wasn't expecting the upgrade for vSAN, but it was good to see all the good stuff coming through.
Know what is the NDA things, put your face on a name, and networking, guys. This is basically what the main reason that I'm doing here on Empower. And of course, we have free tests. I got it one night today, and I was able to pass. So
nice.
Very, very, very happy about it. So that's why I came here this week.
So I'm a traditional storage guy.
like just, you know, EMC storage guy, and I need to just simply transform what I'm doing. I just sort of have this feeling that any customers who's buying a storage array now might be the last storage array they ever buy. So it's just, I mean, it's just simple. Like, I got to transform into a software-defined guy. Like, it's just the way it is. And as this is as good a place to start that process as any. Like, it's just a great introduction to all of this stuff, and it's great, and, like, the more the better. I'm in.
Yeah, so that was my little montage of interviews, John. What was your takeaway from Empower?
So for those of you who don't remember back when PEX was a dedicated event, we used to, you know, around this time, late spring, early summer, go out to the desert, you know, of beautiful Las Vegas and have a closed conference. And what's great about that conference was that everything was under NDA. Nothing was off limits. And I mean nothing. I mean, you could ask any PM or engineer anything, and you'd get a very direct and blunt answer about why we did something or what we were looking to do to solve whatever problem. And we tried to bring my goal was to bring that spirit back. And I think we achieved that. It's, you know, the partners wanted, you know, the truth and nothing but the truth. And I feel like they got it. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, that's it, man. People came for the technical information. They did not come for the marketing slides. They came for the real information. Yeah, I mean, these are partners. They're actually out there. They're pushing this stuff. They're selling it and they want to know. So it was fun to be part of it. It was also good to see you guys in action, like really presenting like this is what the competitors are saying. This is where we are. This is where we need to be. And so, you know, it's very technical, but also very real. I thought it was I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. And one thing to stress is that feedback we get, it goes right back to the PMs. It goes back to engineering. It goes to the business units. There's two more of these coming, by the way. There's going to be one in Austria, and I believe one in APJ. And I encourage you, if you're a partner in one of those regions, to make sure to get out to these events, make sure your voice is heard, as well as get all of your questions answered.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And so we weren't the only technical folks out there. We had a lot of folks from VMware out there that were presenting. And so we had a chance to grab a couple of interviews while we were there. This first one is from Nigel Hickey. He's at vCenter Nerd, and Dave Stammen, who's at Dave Stammen on Twitter. And these guys are working on the vCenter upgrade team. And this is what they had to say about Empower.
Nigel, Dave, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Cool. Yep. Thank you.
So you got a session here at Empower. What's that about?
So our session this week at Empower is focused around vSphere upgrades. So David and I are the face of vSphere upgrades for getting folks off of 5.5 into the 6 realm.
Yeah.
So trying to get folks over to 6.5 to reap the benefits of great features like VMC on AWS and so forth.
Oh, yeah. John and I had a session yesterday in a vSAN deep dive, and that question came up more than once. I want to get to vSAN 6.7. I need to upgrade. I want to upgrade my environment. What are some of the blocking issues? And so I'm glad we have you guys here. What are some of the blocking issues that you guys are seeing?
I think some of the blocking issues are people just unprepared. They don't really know what to expect when planning their upgrades. So we have a lot of resources that are available. But definitely making sure you're reading the documentation, planning for your hardware compatibility, your interop matrix, planning everything out. So I think the biggest hesitance we've seen from customers is our SRM upgrades. So depending on if you're coming from 5.5, there are some stair-step approach you need to do to make sure you're upgrading from 5.5 to 6 and upgrading your supported SRM platform so you're supported and then going to 6.5. So just making sure you're looking at your full solution suite and upgrading, that'll kind of be your biggest savior when upgrading to 6.5.
Well, and one thing that I like I've seen the company do to try to address some of these weird stair-steps, because Horizon used to be really bad about this and they cleaned it up, is one, make it to where you've got multiple, you know, you can upgrade from several versions back. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is, I think SRM was doing with the 8.1 release was being able to have basically you could, once you're on 8.1, you could be on 8.1 on three different vSphere releases. You quit having that lockstep tying and do some forward compatibility, because that's required with AWS as it constantly upgrades.
Yeah, correct. So with 8.1, they kind of made a lot of improvements with that. But unfortunately for the customers who are still stuck on the 5.x vCenters, that's where we still encounter those issues. Once you're on 6.0 or 6.5, those upgrades with SRM are going to be much easier.
Okay.
So once we crowbar off of these ancient releases, we can hopefully stay current, you know, and get beyond that. So
yeah,
I guess that's one question is, are you seeing any customers that are on the 6 releases or are adopting the newer 6 releases and patch levels much quicker than the 5.0 and 5.5? Or
I think so. I think the biggest thing that we always hear or, you know, see internally is 6.5 is the most adopted or the fastest adopted release that we've had. And I think 6.5 update 1 is even higher on the downloads. So folks want to get to that level. So I think it just comes down to preparation. Like they either don't know what to do or they feel that they're blocked, and maybe there's no block. Maybe it's something like they want to upgrade, but the block is internal at the company. So it's not that they don't want to go down the path of getting off of 5.5. It's, hey, we have an Exchange migration, or we have some Oracle thing going on that's more important to C-levels right now. So I've heard that from partners. Like, how do they position that? And that's really, I think, a partner discussion that has to happen, you know, internally, and be a trusted advisor for them to say, yes, we understand that's important, but, you know, can we, you know, channel that off and get you to where we need to be? Because by the time you finish that, that's an Oracle upgrade or whatever that is, you're going to be way behind. We may be in another version before, you know, we have to talk to you again about getting off of 5.5.
Fair point.
What do you see with the velocity of the upgrade process of people going through internally, and, you know, particularly people who've been on an older lease and haven't done any real life cycle work in a while, mm-hmm. versus, you know, going ahead and just bringing in an outside partner, some guys who they do this for a living type stuff? Is it, you see some customers take that as an easy button, or view that as an accelerator?
I think we've done a bunch of workshops, obviously, and I think the biggest driver is customers like to manage their own environments. Is we've seen some people in unsupported topologies, or they're still running Windows even on 6.5. It's because someone else did the upgrades for them. So I think giving the customers control to do the upgrades, I think they kind of enjoy it. We've simplified the upgrade process and migration process drastically with 6.5. So we really like that. But kind of back to the previous question is, what are some things stopping people from upgrading? Is 5.5 was an amazing release. It was extremely stable. We had a lot of good management clients. And we're pretty much getting to the point of, why do I need to upgrade? When we were going 5.5 to 6.0, we're like, well, why should I go to 6.0? Why should I go to 6.5 GA? And now it's pretty much the driving point is 5.5's end of support. And so you need to get off that, especially if you want to go to 6.7, since there is no supported upgrade from 5.5 to 6.7. You need to get to one of the previous 6.x releases.
5.5 is like the Windows XP of...
Exactly. It's right. A good example.
Windows XP had a 10-year run. Wow, yeah, that was an OS, you know, an OS is OS, but...
You don't have XP anymore?
I see it in airports every once in a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Even Windows 7 is ancient at this point. No, it's, you know, it was Windows 7 was good too, but no, it's you need to get off of Windows 7. There's security and significant improvements there. But
so how did you simplify the upgrade?
So simplified migration. So say you're doing an upgrade. We used to say do your simplified upgrade.
You just pull up the binaries and mash enter a lot, right? I mean, that's how you do it.
Yeah, right? You go right to the vSphere.com, get all your bits, and then start pushing next finish. And then you're talking to a partner at Empower trying to figure out what you did wrong.
Nice.
Yeah, and well, when you're on the 6.x, when we're using the appliance, we have the built-in BAMI, which is the vCenter appliance management UI. And so we've integrated updates directly into that. You no longer have to go into my VMware portal, find the right version, download it, make sure you're updating each component independently. Is you can just go right to the management interface, say check for updates, install,
nice,
reboot.
And we had done that previously, and then it went away on one release. And I think there was like a massive outcry of like, I don't know, maybe I was out there with my pitchfork, like bring back VAMI, bring back VAMI, bring back.
Yeah, so it's definitely a good interface. And even with 6.7, we drastically increased the VAMI where you can now specifically stage and install a specific version. So you no longer are stuck doing the latest one. Because the complaint we had was, okay, I'm doing all my testing. I did 6.5 update 1F, went to deploy one vCenter, went to deploy our second one, and now G's released. So we're like, well, how do we do this? Now we have to manually down the ISO, do this the old way. So 6.7 drastically enhanced the lifecycle.
Nice.
By the way, Flash, I hear it's going away. So I was going to say, is the completeness of the HTML5 client also driving some people in any ways? Or
let me grab some tissues first. So,
oh, gosh.
Yes. Yes and no. And it depends. Is it going away? Yes. Is it gone? Is there feature parity at 100%? Not today. So that's probably the biggest ask from customers, partners, everyone. As you know, those pieces are not just easily ported over, and you could take it from the C# or the Flash and just put it right into HTML5. There's certain things that don't jive right now. So there is, I want to say, as of today, we could probably say it's about 95% feature parity.
Okay.
And the promise, or I won't say a promise, but the ask is that most of that is completed to 100% within 6.7's lifecycle. So we're hoping for
that's
that
a target
happen.
At least,
and that's
right?
At least the target. So.
What's left? Like on vSAN, the only thing I think we have is config assist, which isn't necessary. It's just nice to have, and that's targeted for soon.
Yeah. But. So update manager's in there now. Parts of vSAN are in there. If you're on NSX 6.4, part of that's in there. There's really some specific workflows. Like we have a blog post with the exact details what was added in 6.0, 6.5, 6.7. but some of them are like the key details. Like vCenter High Availability is still only in the vSphere web client.
Okay, but that's
there's cloning content library. So they're not your day-to-day workflows, right? We have 95% of general workflows in the vSphere clients.
Well, in vSphere HA, that's something you set up once and then you just move on with life. And you could probably, if you really hate Flash that much, you could just power CLI it, I'm sure. So
I mean, the one thing that I personally, and this is just between home labs, is we use vApps for stuff, so I can't restart my vApp. I don't know, you know, a lot of things customers I haven't seen that have a lot of vApps. So, I mean, that's something you have to fall back on right now, too. But I think that will change.
That's more of a, vCloud Director environments where I see more vApps. But
yeah, our recommendation is use the vSphere HTML5 client for all your workflows. If you find something that you can't do, then fall back at that point. But because of all the performance enhancements, ease of use, it's really a lot better to use.
It's so fast.
Yeah,
I've been using the 6.7 and using the nightly builds in my lab for a while and, it's for our internal build clouds and things. And I think I may have gone to the Flash client once, that was like months ago. I've been able to avoid it. So
have you tried out the little smiley face?
I love the smiley face.
For those that don't know, up in the upper right-hand corner, there's a little nice smiley face now. If you click on that, it will allow you to send feedback to engineering, and it will even allow you to take a screenshot, and you can mark up on the screen and draw pictures and arrows and stuff of what you think is wrong, and then you can submit it. And that
please, nothing obscene.
I was going to say that could go horribly wrong.
Yeah, I mean, some customers and partners I know, but
Yeah, it's definitely good too.
This is not anonymized. We know what you sent us, Miles.
So yeah, there actually is a built-in part where you can put in your email address. So if you do want the engineers, we've sometimes seen them reach back out to customers or partners to be able to find out what were you doing that was encountered, and that's how they prioritize all the features. So that's where we are today.
Yeah, I mean that's really cool. I mean, for a VMware employee I'm new to VMware, the same as Dave, but it's just like amazing to see like that actually went back to somebody. Like as a customer, I always thought like, oh, no one looks at that stuff. You know, Microsoft just wants to see how many licenses I'm using and so forth and all that other garbage. But it's nice to see that that's going to someone and someone's actually getting back to a customer or partner. I think that's super valuable.
Absolutely.
And I know that John has spoke about this with customer experience program.
vSAN Support Insight. The phone home capabilities.
Yeah.
I still get excited when an engineer will reach out to us and be like, hey, we're doing this new interface on vSAN and what do you guys think of that? I just love, I do love about VMware is they are listening and the developers are connected. You know, it's not like it's this big black hole. You submit your information and you never get any answers. So that's pretty cool.
And to add to that a little bit on the Fling, since the Fling for HTML5 is still available, the features in there are usually newer than what's in the GA release. But that smiley face comes into play again because give the feedback on those features that you love.
Oh, yeah.
Because the more the feedback comes in or the better the feedback or the amount of feedback, it's going to get to a GA release faster. So customers that want those things to be fixed or that feature parity that's not there, it sometimes may come down to we don't know who's using that feature still.
Wait. So if we use that, though, everything comes faster. So William Lamb, we need you to automate a script to open 1,000 smileys. And
well, you know. William is another awesome person with great scripts that I won't ask him to upgrade anything just yet to 6.7, but I heard that some people are already bothering him. So,
Oh, yeah. That's another story. Nigel, Dave, thanks for joining us today.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So I actually was just talking to Nigel. He's actually coming tomorrow to Houston to do one of these. So these workshops are going everywhere. Check their schedules. If you're wanting to know how to get off of 5.5 and get into the modern era of awesomeness, check out with those guys and follow them on Twitter.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So the next interview we have is from a good friend of ours, Dave Marrera, on Twitter at Great White Tech. And Dave works in the proof of concept team at VMware, focusing on vSAN deployments. And he had a really popular session at Empower called vSAN Design Considerations. Generated a lot of really good conversation, and here's what he had to say about that.
All right, joining us now is Mr. Great White Tech, Dave Marrera. How you doing, buddy?
What up?
So what are you talking about at Empower?
Yeah, so my session is going to be based on not the requirements for vSAN, but more on the considerations, what to look at. vSAN has a lot of variables that a lot of nerd knobs we can turn. So it's going to be focused on, what to look out for the pre-sale side and the post-sale side as well. Obviously, you know, your customer requirements is going to come into place as far as, you know, what they need and what they want, but also, you know, the decisions and the considerations that you tell your customers are going to come into play as far as performance and pricing, and et cetera. So we're going to look at the whole thing, you know, from the pre-sales and post-sales perspective.
So what is the most underappreciated thing that should be considered?
I would say the hardware choices. Most of the people like to go cheap and deep, but also want performance. And that's something you can have both.
So cake and eat it too.
Yep. So I've seen a lot of customers.
What, you're telling me 16 terabyte NVMe drives aren't, they're not 10 cents a gig?
This is like when virtualization first came out and they were like, oh, we can take all of our workloads and consolidate them into just one server.
We'll get a quad socket. That should be good enough, right? If it's got if it quad socket with 8 gigs of RAM, right?
Sure. That's good. But they make the mistake that thinking just because it's an SSD drive that is going to be, you know, performance driven. But the difference between SATA and SAS is there. So there's something to consider when it's really one of the main things I tell the customers.
Yeah, that came up earlier. I had some partners asking about, you know, SATA versus, are the SATA SSDs, can I go that route? It's like, yeah. Well, if you want performance, you really want the SATA.
Yeah, and we see that on the field all the time. Any SATA SSDs are not going to perform well.
That's from, you know, QDAPs and other things, you know, typically the DRAM and other stuff associated with those drives.
Correct. Yep. Yep. So that comes into place when doing, you know, destaging all kinds of things. So that's one of the things, you know, SATA versus SAS. Also, you know, per controllers versus HBAs. That's another big one.
Use the HBA. Do not use the RAID controller.
Yeah. And even if you go per controller, you know, you should use them. Just remember, you know, got to turn off those advanced settings. We don't need them. We need to allow vCenter to do most of the thinking. And also, you know, make sure that, you know, try to do JBOD over here. Yeah.
But at that point, why don't you just get the device that's just as fast, if not faster, and costs a quarter as much? So
yeah, exactly.
It's, I mean, if you're reusing it, I guess, brownfield.
But yeah.
You can probably sell them on eBay and, you know, still get enough cost recoup just to get, you know, two HBAs for one of those things.
So. Probably. Yeah. So, yeah, to your point, that was, you know, my session is going to be based on that. A lot of tricks and tips, also some performance testing. That seems to be a misconception. So properly sizing a test, just because you have one VM running workloads doesn't mean that's going to give you 400,000 NIOs. So, you know, properly sizing the test is very important.
I'm thinking one disk group with one capacity drive, both SATA. Why would I need two? Can I use 5,400 RPM drives?
You could.
What do you view as like your minimum starting point on disk groups?
So disk groups minimum recommend minimum two. And then we see a linearly increasing performance once you go 2+ or 3, and then it levels out around 4. So usually 2 or 3 is a good mix. Obviously, the size of disk groups come into play as well when you're thinking data bank compression. Right, the larger the disk group, the more the ratios can be bigger. So things to consider.
Yeah, and if you want to use those advanced features, really having that second disk group helps mitigate any I/O overheads, right?
Correct. Yep. Yeah. You're increasing your cache, decreasing your failure domains as well.
All right, man.
I like it.
All right, so that was Dave Moreira. Yeah, Dave bringing the good advice. He's done a lot of these proof of concepts, and he's always telling me the horror stories when he walks in and customers have already spent all the money on all the gear, and he has to tell them, oh, great, but now you need to buy something different because you didn't design this properly.
No, you got to read the documents. You got to actually make sure your gear is on the HCL. You know, it's not that hard, people, you know. And also reach out to your VCNSCs. They can help get you set up with guys like this.
Absolutely. And so the last one we had was a good friend of mine, Mr. Jad Elzine. He's a master in the vRealize suite, and I've come to him several times for help on VRA, and he was talking about the new release of VRA 7.4. And so here's Jad talking about VRA 7.4 and Developer Cloud.
So last week, we GA'd VRA 7.4, as well as Ops 6.7, VRO 7.4, VRBC 7.4.
And why aren't all the numbers aligned? Come on.
Ops is rogue. Ops is now somehow aligned with vCenter. Not really sure how that's worked out. But being consumed by vCenter for vCen, that's a really nice integration.
Yeah.
But back to VRA. There's been a lot of work done in VRA. Some of the greatest additions in VRA 7.4 are, in my opinion, are the Custom Forms Designer, which is a Clarity-based UI designer. Now, don't quote me on this, but I guess I have to be quoted on this. For anybody who remembers Microsoft Front Page in the early web days,
man. Yes.
This is a little bit embarrassing, but the perfect analogy for Custom Forms Designer for VRA is the front page for forms. And yes, it's very embarrassing.
The WYSIWYG?
Yeah. So it's very embarrassing, but But ultimately, what the custom forms designer does, first of all, it's going to fulfill a lot of the demanded use cases that typically our XaaS capability fills today, especially with being able to manipulate the user experience as they consume services. The custom forms designer is specifically built for that, so we no longer have to use extensibility for something as basic as that. It's all built in Clarity, which is pretty awesome.
Yeah.
The rest of the product will be adopting Clarity in the next release. But the forms designer really allows us to drag and drop the individual artifacts that make up a blueprint from the blueprint design and lay them out exactly how we want to use them on the canvas. It allows us to bring in external resources, invoke VRO actions via dropdown, create binding relationships, and just tons of control and policy and presentation capability so that we can start delivering services exactly how the cloud architects or the cloud admins want them to be consumed. And that applies to any existing blueprint. As you upgrade to 7.4, you could immediately start using custom forms with it. And also import, export, apply CSS, a lot of really great things.
Obviously, people have been using this a lot for private cloud implementations, but I'm also seeing, you know, we talk quite a bit about hybrid cloud. You mentioned kind of bringing in different services and drag and drop. What about external integrations? What about consuming public cloud services, unique PaaS capabilities, and blending that with your existing private cloud workflow in a hybrid design?
Yeah, so there's a couple of approaches there. So admittedly, VRAs, public cloud endpoints, it's very IaaS focused. We're not, so for specifically around Azure and AWS, there's a big focus on just consuming the images and the AMIs and so on. Okay. And vSphere as well. To go beyond that and start consuming the native services of those platforms and largely the reason why folks use those platforms and the economies of scale, those haven't really been exposed natively through VRA yet. However, there are plugins and other capabilities of doing it.
Yeah.
The important thing is that it's known. We're not blind to that capability. And while there's a huge focus on vSphere and exposing some of those core services, I mean, we're going to see things kind of even out in the future here. The next-gen platform, in fact, skips agents and DEMs and all those altogether and goes straight to the API of the individual provider, giving us as much exposure into the native capability as possible and bring that all into infrastructure as code. But enough about what's coming in the future. What's happening right now, yes, drag and drop IaaS components right onto our canvas. We can build complex applications. We can build software stacks on top of that, pass custom properties, so on and so forth. Invoke some level of extensibility, just not as powerful as vSphere. And through custom forms, we can now start delivering all those services in a very consistent way from a UI perspective. And all those integrations are great. However, when you take a step outside of VRA and start looking at what we've done with the VRA provider or the Terraforms provider for VRA, for example, now we can start adapting use cases where VRA is a provider, an IaaS consumption provider, for Terraform, and in that same Terraform TF file, for example, I can start calling native services and do this all in a single common lifecycle, building it together. So, I mean, while I'm not out there selling Terraform, for customers who are using Terraform, it's pretty powerful to just incorporate VRA as part of that.
This is your master provisioning platform for that, and if there's something highly specialized you need that it's not maybe not there today, it may come tomorrow, you can leverage those integrations those other providers
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, for anybody familiar with VRA, you know, if it's got a REST API or a command line or a shell or SOAP even, I mean, it can be incorporated as part of an application's lifecycle or as a service on its own. VRO is very powerful in that world as well. But admittedly, again, we can do a lot more work for the native integrations, and that's where the vast majority of the investment's going moving forward.
Also, you mentioned, you know, external AMIs and images, but also you've got additional image capabilities for bringing in with this release, or you've expanded that?
Yep. So on the vSphere side, we now can back, in addition to clones and snapshots for link clones, we could now back templates or the components with OVFs and OVAs. And all of that is supported with the image profiles as well and can all be consumed via custom forms. So yeah, baby steps there. OVFs and OVAs are, you know, they started internally because we use VRA to build VRA. And we use CodeStream to build in CI/CD for our next gen platform. So we're learning a lot there and able to pass on the goods to our consumers who are also asking for that kind of stuff.
So, Jad, I know early days, the vRealize suite in general got some criticism for being awesome, powerful, but complicated to deploy. Yes. And I know that changed a little while. I think the last version, it actually got significantly, the infrastructure got significantly simpler.
The life cycle bits.
So. Yeah. So a couple of things have happened throughout this generation of tools. And that is, first of all, the built-in wizards have become a lot more streamlined. And VRA, for example, you know, while the IaaS and Windows components still exist, there's been a lot of work done to make them as invisible as possible, right? So yeah, it's BYO Windows box, but after that, you know, we're pushing all the content. We're taking a lot of the guesswork out of it. And ultimately, yes, we're going to be moving away from those Windows components, and you'll be hearing a lot about that in the future.
Can you give me exact dates?
Well, come to VMworld.
See, that's
Ooh, what, that's a
that,
good hint.
No, that see, that's where you start. Oh yeah, it's going to be on.
I can't hear. Did you turn my mic?
The mic is off.
The mic on the 20.
That's it.
And that's it. That's exactly wow. Right. That's I wasn't expecting that.
So, we've done a lot of work with the wizards, right? The wizards have become very helpful, and the conversation's less and less these days. Second piece is maturity of the API. At this point, I can deploy, set up, configure, consume VRA in the vast majority of the vRealize suite without ever logging into a UI. And that was all done as pre-work for another announcement of last week, which is LCM. So vRealize suite, lifecycle manager, LCM, 1.2. Now, again, I'll share with this audience, 1.0, which was released late last year,
right,
was cute. Yeah,
that's cute.
1.1 was functional. 1.2 is a staple in every vRealize suite environment, and it's entitled to every vRealize suite customer. So go out there, download it, consume it. One of the immediate things you can do is manage existing environments, so you can start doing those LCM principles around or the lifecycle capabilities around the existing multi-stage, multi-environment deployments of vRealize suite. But we are also adding the ability for content management. Anyone familiar with Houdini lives in LCM. So artifact management across vRealize suite, across stage, across your environments is all managed centrally now, as well as the on-prem marketplace. We've recently released 40, with a partnership with Bitnami, 40 prepackaged applications that I, if you recall, maybe a year ago, I went to Twitter and said, hey, give me your top applications. We put out some surveys out there. The result of that is, in the marketplace with a team of us went and prioritized a bunch of stuff, and there's way more coming. But LCM, its most powerful capability is to start from nothing, download LCM, and deliver the entire vRealize suite from a single interface.
Wow.
And that's initial day zero deployment, and then day two, drift control, drift management, upgrade, and patching across the environment. It's hugely significant for our vRealize customers.
I mean, this has just been a central theme across a lot of the different groups and product teams we've talked to, is improving lifecycle consistency, and not just the day zero, the install, but also that the day two ops, upgrades, roll forward, roll back, all of that, and making the upgrade paths less stair-steppy, giving more flexibility. It's good to see that focus on the customer, so to speak, and recognizing we've got a lot of existing customers we need to take care of, not just the net new with these new improvements.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what exactly did you talk about concerning the dev cloud, developer cloud?
Yeah, so this morning I had a session here at Empower. It's actually one of two sessions that I've been basically pushing out internally to the VMware field. And in this first session, we shared with our partners this week, and that's understanding what a developer cloud is. And it's a fundamental or more of an introduction for your typical cloud admins and cloud architects who need to spend more time with the developers and delivering infrastructure and resources and bridging the gap with a cloud architect and maybe an SRE. Put a lot of emphasis on that role and how important it's going to be for us in the future. But developer cloud isn't something that's very foreign to us. While we don't get a lot of credit for playing in that game, we're way more relevant than we might get credit for, admittedly. So that session, both internally and for these partners today, was more about understanding the tools that are available today, things like CodeStream, things like the traditional cloud management platform, and the fact that because we're still talking IaaS doesn't mean we're antiquated. IaaS is still a huge part of a dev lifecycle. It's a huge part of a CI/CD. It's a significant part of going to production with any application. Ultimately, you're going to consume IaaS. And until we can say that's completely behind us, then yes, these products will be left behind. That's far to come.
But I thought we were all in, you know, stateless micro container services. Using Lambda or whatever it is. It's, you know.
Yeah, so hologram-based application services aren't quite the reality yet. But DevCloud, honestly, it's the first step of building what's called an Agile Cloud. Agile Cloud is going to highly leverage our next-gen set of applications. And the idea here is we are taking a developer-first approach on all the future of our applications, all the future development of our applications. And we need to start putting on that mindset now and asking the audience here, you know, how many of you think VMware is relevant in a dev conference? I think I got 4 or 5 hands out of about 80 people. Wow. So it wasn't comfortable, but it was expected.
Yeah.
And we need to change that immediately. We play a significant role today, and what we ship next gen is going to completely turn that perception around. And I'm really, really looking forward to that.
Build on that success of the infrastructure layer. So.
Yes.
And the layer below you has to be stable and consistent and deliver a reliable and consistent computing environment.
Yes.
It's kind of like the storage guys are like, oh, the hardware doesn't matter. Just grab whatever laptop drop. You know, people always try to trivialize the layer below them and underestimate it. But
Totally agree.
Until it's down and on fire and you're, what'd you do?
Yeah, and if you look at some of the buzzwords here, right? So CI/CD. I mean, we've been playing this game. In fact, we probably did it a little early. And so CI/CD, infra as code, we're doing with YAML. We're doing the custom consumption layers. We've got a full API stack now capable. We're doing a lot more of the SCDC API this year. We're moving to SaaS. Not moving to SaaS, but we're introducing a new SaaS offering, which is a ground-up rebuild of an Agile cloud management platform in SaaS, independent of VRA or vRealize Suite. And a lot of lessons learned there is going to be applied for our next-gen on-prem capability as well. So there's a lot of activity. 8.5 years at VMware, I've never been this excited to be a part of what we're doing. And at the end of this month, I'll be a bigger part of that. So I'm looking forward to that. And hopefully we can stick to this message and deliver some pretty great things.
Fantastic. Well, we'll see you at VMworld. We're looking forward to seeing that. Thanks, Jad.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
It was great hearing from Jad, you know, not only where we are right now with the product and, you know, what we're focusing on doing, but also acknowledging some of the gaps or perceived gaps in capabilities and how we're able to address those.
Yeah, that was very interesting. I like that. So yeah, that's our coverage on Empower 2018. Awesome partner event filled with technical sessions, hands-on labs, all kinds of workshops and deep dives. Really, really, really good content if you're a partner for VMware. As John mentioned, they might be having these in Austria and APJ. So if you're in those areas, be on the lookout for Empower 2018. John, next week, we're going to be doing some more 6.7 coverage. We're going to try and get in somebody from the vCenter team, maybe even some of the core storage guys to talk about what's new in vSphere 6.7.
And I'll be off in Vegas, hopefully trying to get an interview with a special guest or two.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Looking forward to that, man. Don't mess it up.
No pressure, no diamonds, baby.
Awesome. All right. Well, that music tells me it's time to go. And so if you want to get in touch with us, send us an email at podcast@vmware.com. You can subscribe to us on your podcast app of choice by searching Virtually Speaking Podcast. You can catch this and all episodes at vspeakingpodcast.com. A big thanks to all of our guests this week at Empower 2018. We're back next week, but until then, bye for now.
You're the virtually speaking guy.
See.
I am profoundly dumb.
Oh, now. Yeah.
Enough of this jibber jabber.